Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On June 9th, 2008, the Supreme Court decided Ellison Engine Co. v. United States, involving two provisions of the False Claims Act. The court ruled that in order to show that a subcontractor violated 31 U.S.C. 3729A2, it is not sufficient to show that the subcontractor's use of a false statement resulted in the payment of a claim or that government funds were used to pay the claim. Rather, the provision requires that the subcontractor made the false statement for the purpose of having the contractor use the false statement to get the government to pay the contractor. Likewise, the court ruled that the conspiracy provision, 31 U.S.C. 3729A3, requires proof that conspirators not only engaged in conduct that involved making a false statement, but agreed that the statement would have a material effect on the government's decision to pay the false or fraudulent claim. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, Attorney Marcia Madsen, a partner at Mayer Brown, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Madsen.
On June 9, the Supreme Court issued its unanimous opinion in the case of Ellison Engine v. U.S. X. Rel. Sanders. Just to review for a moment, this case was brought as a QI-TAM action under the False Claims Act, 31 U.S.C. Sections 3729A2 and A3. Section 3729A2 imposes civil liability, including treble damages and civil penalties, upon a person who knowingly uses a false statement to get a false or fraudulent claim paid or approved by the government. Section 3729A3 imposes civil liability, including damages and penalties, on a person who conspires to defraud the government by getting a false or fraudulent claim allowed or paid. In shorthand, A2 is referred to as the false statement provision, and A3 is referred to as the conspiracy provision. As a factual matter, the case involved Navy contracts with two shipyards to build destroyers. The destroyers required generator sets for electrical power. The shipyards subcontracted with Ellison Engine Company to build what are called the gensets. Ellison entered into a subcontract with two other entities for building the bases and enclosures and for assembling the gensets. Southern Ohio Fabricators built the bases and enclosures, and General Tool Company assembled the gensets. The subcontracts required a certificate of conformance, also known as a COC, that the genset was produced in accordance with the Navy specifications. Two employees of General Tool filed a QI-TAM action, alleging that the COCs were false. At the trial court, the district court, the QI-TAM relators introduced evidence that the COCs falsely stated the work was in accordance with the Navy specifications. But the relators did not introduce evidence that the invoices were actually sent by the shipyards to the Navy. The trial court granted judgment for Ellison as a matter of law, stating that without proof that the false claims were presented to the government, the relators' evidence was legally insufficient to establish False Claims Act liability. The Sixth Circuit reversed, holding that the relators' claims did not require proof of an intent to cause a false claim to be paid by the government. Instead, that proof of an intent to cause such a claim to be paid by a private entity using government funds was sufficient. In its ruling, the Supreme Court unanimously rejected the Sixth Circuit's reasoning. There are two key aspects to the court's holding. First, Justice Alito, writing for the court, said that it is insufficient for a plaintiff asserting a claim based on a false statement under 3729A2 to just show that the false statement resulted in the claim being paid or approved. Rather, he said, a plaintiff must prove that the defendant intended that the false record or statement be material to the government's decision to pay or approve the false claim. Similarly, the court said that a relator asserting a claim under 3729A3 the conspiracy provision must show that the conspirators agreed to make use of the false record for the purpose of getting the claim paid or approved by the government. In reaching this result, the court analyzed the language of the statute carefully. It noted that under A2, the defendant must make the false statement, quote, to get a false claim paid or approved by the government, close quote. In other words, the court said that the false statement must have as its purpose getting the government to pay. The defendant must intend that the government pay the claim. The court stated that eliminating this element of intent would expand the False Claims Act far beyond its role of combating fraud against the government. And the court noted without this element of intent, the reach of A2 would be, quote, boundless. Second, the court emphasized that its holding stands for the basic proposition that the False Claims Act, both the false statement and the conspiracy provisions, does not reach situations where private parties merely receive and pay out contract money or grant money or other federal funds unless the U.S. government itself actually makes or approves the payment. But the court was concerned, as was discussed in the oral argument, that because federal dollars are in virtually everything, any other interpretation would make the reach of the statute, to use the court's words, boundless. The court took DOJ to task for making the argument that the phrase, quote, paid by the government, close quote, does not mean that the government must literally pay the bill. The court pointed out that the DOJ's reliance on the definition of the term claim in Section 3729C means that the phrase paid by the government should not be read literally. Under 3729C, the claim itself need not be made directly to the government, but may include a request for payment made to a contractor, grantee, or other recipient of federal funds if the U.S. government provides any portion of the money or property which is requested or demanded, or if a government will reimburse the contractor or grantee. The court's answer to the DOJ's argument was simple. A claim need not necessarily be made directly to the government, but it is still necessary for the defendant to intend that the claim be paid by the government and not by some other entity. Essentially, the court skirted the presentment issue that everyone thought was going to be the focus of this opinion and by this analysis. The court said that there can be liability when a claim is presented to a federal officer for payment under 3729A1, which is the presentment provision, where a claim is presented directly to a federal officer, or under A2, where the claim is presented to a grantee or contractor, if the defendant intends to get the government's payment or approval. In a typical government contract case, a subcontractor's request for payment is passed through to the government, so normally this would not be an issue, but it was an issue in the Allison case because of the failure of proof that the invoice was actually passed through to the government. The court said that if a subcontractor or other defendant makes a false statement to a private entity and does not intend the government to rely on that false statement as a condition of payment, then the statement is not made with the purpose of inducing payment of a false claim by the government. Otherwise, the court said, recognizing a cause of action under the False Claims Act for fraud directed at private entities would threaten to transform the False Claims Act into a, quote, all-purpose, close quote, fraud statute. Interestingly, the court says in a footnote that its discussion of intent does not have any effect on the knowing or knowingly standard in 31 U.S.C. 3729B. Rather, the court's holding has nothing to do with the knowingly standard, but instead is directed at the intent to get the claim paid by the government. This may turn out to be a subtle distinction that is the fodder for future disputes. Ultimately, this opinion may provide lots of controversy that is used for the pending legislation to amend the False Claims Act. There's definitely a community of relators counsel that believes this should be an all-purpose fraud statute. So it will be interesting to see how long this opinion will stand and whether it will be overtaken by legislation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.